more like here's a regular contributor. Why don't you just push record? No, then you got to go edit that. Watch out for that light.
I don't have to record. I don't have to edit anything. We have Corey McIlvaine as a regular contributor, and Corey Osmond is going to tell him what he's talking about.
Unbelievable. Today,
it's not unbelievable.
Today, Corey McIlvaine is going to be here helping us talk about the conversation.
I am here.
That's true. Yeah, he's not going to be here.
I'm here.
He is present already.
Today, we've got Corey McIlvaine, who is currently present.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast.
So the topic today is teaching versus training. And I don't actually like that word versus.
Yeah.
It's like the conversation of teaching and training.
We got to call Damien back. We have a lot of good upgrades for addition to.
I'm sure he's ready to hear all of our suggestions. But the idea of, so we're going to say sometimes teaching versus training, but even though we probably mean more teaching and training.
Absolutely.
And I think Damien, so this is within the greater section of what the church does. So we're using Damien's language to talk about various subjects of movement, thinking, and practice compared to what he says, church as we know it, the CAWKI, C-A-W-K-I, church as we know it acronym, which we often say we used to say predominant.
No, we used to say prevailing.
Now we say predominant, which is really whatever you want to say, to legacy, other church paradigm, steeple church, all
church as we know it.
Church as we know it.
Church as we did know it.
Did know it.
Wait, that sounded bad. That sounded really arrogant. That's not what I meant.
Every once in a while, it comes out.
It sneaks out.
And so the idea is, his point is, teaching in that paradigm, the CAWKI paradigm, is like the essential activity. It's mm-hmm. what we do.
Yep.
I think this goes back to like probably the 1500s and Reformation, yeah, and that whole deal where it's like the pulpit becomes kind of the main focal point. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons for this rationalism, mm-hmm, but like we moved to this place where it's like the 30-minute sort of TED Talk is the aim, yeah. Yeah. And what we've elevated as the highest point, which connected elevates a person who's really good at that, by the way.
Yep.
So that's all sort of wrapped up into the whole conversation.
Totally. So this is all a big intro, because Corey McIlvaine's not only going to be here, but he is here to talk about this very thing. But
present.
But with that, so where the word verse comes in, or comparing to the way that we're mm-hmm. trying to run with stuff, is like teaching has its role, mm-hmm, no doubt. And what does it look like to teach? What does it look like to teach one another? Is really the biblical picture that we have a lot, ooh, in the New Testament. But
I didn't hear the pages of your Bible turn.
I could do that.
Where does that come from?
Oh, man. Colossians 3. Where else does it say teach? I mean, basically, when it describes the church gathering, we're teaching one another.
Sorry, go back. Not only are we supposed to teach one another,
but we're comparing, like, there is a level of equipping and training that comes, right? So we're looking at the, you know, Ephesians 4, where we're looking at the role of the apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, teacher. And what do they do?
They teach.
Equip.
Oh,
teacher.
Sorry.
Teach.
You mean all of them.
Yeah.
We equip the saints for the works of ministry.
Yeah. So there's that idea of equipping. And so today the conversation is around training. What's the role of training and movements? How do we balance that with teaching? What are some strategies? And so we have a regular contributor and fellow KC Underground-er. Dude, that was a solid Corey.
And director of Zero Hour Ministries, right, the citywide student initiatives of the Kansas City Underground. Yeah.
And it's something I think you do really well and have emphasized well with students, is the idea of both teaching but also training. Mm-hmm. Into mobilizing. So we thought Corey would be a good person to have for this conversation. So all of that being said, what do you think? Good stuff?
I think we're good. Question. Let's go.
All right.
I'm in.
Present. Yeah. So what are your initial thoughts on that? Like, how have you seen that play out in your strategy with students?
Yeah. I mean, I think even kind of my own personal origin stories of, I don't know, my life, you know, is like my dad predominantly is a very effective teacher,
yeah,
like a
yeah.
really gifted speaker and teacher. So I grew up watching that, but also, I don't know, in a healthy way, there was a lot of, like, my dad also, like, within, he did a lot of equipping, which happened in the MAP circle, right? So in the seminary type circle, which was an apprenticeship model of seminary.
Ministry apprenticeship program. Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yep. Yeah. So he like, I think he even himself, you know, without labeling it this, saw that personal shift totally. Being more effective in the equipping of, you know, younger men and women who want to be leaders in any church format, and just recognizing the issues of seminaries where, I mean, I don't know what we would call, it was probably some combination of teaching and equipping in a seminary, right? Mm. But I'm going to guess it probably leans a little heavier on the teaching side, less on the real equipping, tangible reality of doing things, walking it out. So he was seeing that issue because I don't remember what the stat was, but it's some crazy number of seminary grads that do nothing with ministry post-graduation.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like it's well over 50%.
I remember hearing your dad talk about that. Yeah.
And he was like, are you kidding me? Kind of, you know, like, yeah. I mean, I think his out of his seminary experience was seeing that happen.
Yeah.
And so personal experience. And then I think he was trying to go, how do I create a pipeline for leaders within Heartland at the time? To really be sent out, to be launched into new circles, spheres, and then, you know, refilling what we're doing in terms of needing more leaders and, you know, just trying to get more workers for the harvest. So thus came MAP out of that. And so I grew up watching my own dad kind of shift some of that thinking process into more equipping, because MAP was solely based in the reality of like, yeah, we're not going to do this thing where you read 1,000 books and do book reports and then do no ministry. So it was very much saturated in we're going to read things and tangibly see how that plays out in ministry. So I've seen that personally. And then within 0 hour now, you know, I don't know, maybe part of me has some, you know, wounds of past of where it was like I've been around only predominant teaching things. Mm. And as we shifted in kind of the Reach Model House Church stuff, we started seeing, that, you know, that teaching model is like, how do we balance that? I think that was one of the greatest struggles we had is trying to figure out the balance of the two within Reach.
Yeah.
Because while on one hand we saw it was so needed and necessary to continue equipping, like that was evident. It was effective. But on the flip side, you know, we kind of got introduced to a model of even house church as this format of just a smaller version of church where the person teaches at.
Yeah, yeah. I do feel like if you're listening to this, there. So Reach was a network of house churches in the city a while back that Corey's dad helped kind of catalyze, and really some forerunners and a lot of stuff that we're doing in the city. But I hear you. Like we had some mentors in another part of the country where they emphasized church in a house. But you're right, it's heavy emphasis on teaching.
Yeah, not equipping.
Yeah, and it was always really hard because that was a model that I lived into for a long time, and it was so hard to reproduce leaders.
Absolutely.
So hard because you needed a MAP
type. I mean, you needed a gifted teacher, speaker. I mean, that's what you needed, and not just one who can do it from a stage.
Totally.
Like, that's a totally different environment to teach in, to be able to be in a circular environment that, like, you know, people can speak up. They can have objections.
Right.
Like in that place we were learning, people often did do that. So it was like you had to be ready to almost defend, you know, in an apology, which is phenomenal, great. But it was also, that takes a very gifted skill, requirement of that individual.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting.
It's always going to be the people that are fast processors and verbal processors, too, that work the best in that way.
Absolutely.
If you're a slower processor on thoughts and I'm not comparing fast and slow as one is good and one is bad. It's like everybody has different
reality in that environment.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people aren't verbal. You know, like there's a distinction between I need to sit with this for a while. It's like it's suddenly if you're in that environment, it's going to elevate the fast processors and the verbal processors over everyone else. Even though oftentimes it's the slower and nonverbal processors that offer the, dare I say, better wisdom because they thought about it before it came out.
Totally. Sure. I mean, I don't relate. I don't know, but I hear, you know, figuratively speaking, or not figuratively speaking, whatever the word I'm looking for. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like other people totally might do that. Okay, so as we think about that conversation then of the role of teaching, no matter if it's in a macro or micro environment, we still have elevated historically in the way that we have mm-hmm. done church this individual who is teaching information, and that is kind of the pinnacle. That is the way of either equipping or disciple making.
I think it's always important to go to why do we do that? Like just to take 2 minutes and go, why do you think that we do that? Before we talk about a better way or another way.
Right. Which may or more may not be better. Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. However you define better, more effective, do what we're called to do, the Great Commission. Sorry.
I threw out there like, you know, you can kind of historically trace in the early version of the church. Like biblically, when we read Acts, they're meeting in each other's homes. Mm-hmm. Paul gives instructions for worship that talks about multiple people bringing words for the body, that household, that extended family, people bringing a song, people bringing an interpretation. And then at some point, that's clearly not the experience. I mean, we reach a point where at least a person that's gifted is elevated, mm-hmm. and then that teaching portion of the quote-unquote gathering or service is elevated. Why did we get there? And why did we stay there?
Yeah. I guess my first inclination is just like less about the individual that is, like, because I think God does gift people in that way.
Totally.
That seems clear.
Right.
On the flip side, I think it's less about that individual. Well, some of it is about that individual. The other part of it, I think, becomes the spectator. The ordinary person becomes now a spectator, no longer, you know, in some ways, you do spectate when somebody's teaching. You are listening, but I don't know for how many years it's been proven that just being taught at and not having some form of engagement is not going to help you. It's going to result in you just listening as opposed to it becoming a reality of your life or integrating that into what you do. So I think in some ways too, it's like there is some blame on the ordinary listener, you know, mm-hmm. where they almost have allowed that reality to exist.
Let's go with, instead of blame, responsibility.
Responsibility, yeah. Yeah. Responsibility on the ordinary listener because, you know, and I think that's human nature, is that if somebody can give you the answers to the test, you typically take that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm, like, hearing is, like, we slowly built a structure that, like, over the course of many years of slowly reinforcing that structure is, like, this is what should just be true.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked hard to hold the knowledge. Now receive my knowledge.
Exactly.
And it's also a little safer, right? Yeah. I mean, there's, like, you know, if I trust you with it and I don't have to own, you know, all of this flows from what, like, I think you can see a progression of what Damien's doing with, like, if we own disciple making versus adherence to truth, then we're going to engage. If we're adherence to just a set of beliefs or knowledge, which we've already talked about or is coming, I'm lost in the map now. But anyway, confused. They all flow together, right?
Yeah. I mean, and imagine what that does for the average person looking at a pastor or whoever has all the answers.
Who's spent hours prepping. Mm-hmm.
The disconnect that actually has from the real life people, real feet on the ground. Like, actually, the one of the quotes that Damien has here is, as cocky pastors teach so frequently at such an advanced level that they've set an example for very few people in the congregation, can follow. So, I mean, essentially there is this reality that as knowledge and all this stuff is elevated, I used to tell people this and I had no statistic to it, but I was like, I bet you just from, you know, just observing large churches with great teaching pastors, I was like, I bet you there's some sort of trend of the better the speaker is up front, the less engaged in missional disciple making the congregants are. And I have no idea if that is true as far as statistics, but just, you know, anecdotally and just like seeing it, it's like, dude, the more people come just to be fed from a good teacher, do you actually see that reproduced on a missional reality very often? I don't. I mean, that's, and I might just be wrong on that, but like I simply observed that we get all these people at a church with a really, really talented speaker. The more that they just, that's the extent of following Jesus for them, is to hear this person speak. So it actually, in the end, cuts the legs out from under them in their like actual discipleship. And again, I'm sure that I'm not going at that from a very fair perspective, but I have, that's actually one of the things that frustrated me so much about being in church circles for years and years and years, is that it's like, man, there's such a good communicator, but what is actually happening on the back end was like so hard for me to, you know, swallow.
I also think like there's a difference between somebody who teaches, like there's different styles of teaching. I was just thinking about different individual leaders and speakers. Like there's very much like an inspirational style that, you know, I don't want to say like, I do think that there probably is some very healthy effectiveness in that format,
that's fair.
You know, in a way that could potentially catalyze a few in the room. You know?
Well, it has.
Yeah,
it has.
Like the truth is we're here.
Yeah.
Because we grew up with some fantastic teachers.
Yeah.
That helped us see the scriptures in a unique way.
But is that why we're here?
That's part of it.
I mean,
Not just why, but like I'm thinking like holistically, full narrative of your life is part of the reason why.
Yeah.
And it's not totally on them, but it's a part of that formational piece, which I think is like maybe where we're trying to get to pull the verses out and say, no, teaching is an important part of building foundations. Mm-hmm. It can't be the ultimate. It must be penultimate.
Right.
Like it has to be lowered in its importance of, or not, I don't want to say lowered in its importance, but balanced with the training. Like
that's what I think, frequency of it. Like the amount of time you do it is going to reflect the reality of how your, in general, church body or those that are in your sphere, like, are going to engage with it. It's like if 95% of your time is spent teaching from a pulpit, like you're going to get that result.
Right.
It's not like that part is that confusing to me. It's like if you just shifted the amount of percentage where you're equipping to teaching, I think there'd be some much more evidence in ways that you're engaging your ordinary everyday believer to catalyze them into mission.
Yeah.
How many times have you read Acts chapter 4? A lot. Yeah. So I'm going back through Acts right now. Read through Acts chapter 4 this morning. Peter and John are before the council. This is one of my favorite passages.
Yeah.
Because of, like they're preaching, but verses 13 through 15. Well, really 16. It says, the members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. They also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus, that's the line that always just like rings my bell, you know. But since they could see the man who had been healed standing right there among them, there was nothing the council could say. So they ordered Peter and John out of the council chamber and conferred among themselves. Verse 16, what should we do with these men? They talk about what they should do. It says they come back and they command them never to speak and teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John replied, you think God wants us to obey you rather than him? I love to let the chips fall where they may.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're going to do this, you know. But the thing that stood out as I read this morning was I've always emphasized that line. They were ordinary. They were unschooled, ordinary men who had no special training in the scriptures. And when I read that this morning, I'm journaling and I wrote ... except they spent 3 years with the author.
Yeah.
No special training.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that is some special training to spend 3 years with Jesus. And then to think about when you're saying, Corey, like the amount of time he spends teaching, the kingdom of heaven is like, go into the next towns and villages and proclaim the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is like, rise and walk. Well, in this moment when they cross this man at the gate beautiful, it's like, oh, we know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, but he teaches all throughout the Gospels.
But how does he teach?
Yeah, no, I'm not.
No, I'm with you. You're so every. Your point is.
Yeah,
amazing.
I'm just doing. Yeah,
it's so good, and I'm with you. But I think that's part. Roy Moran has a great chapter in his book Spent Matches that he looks at, just the Greek mindset of teaching and how we've really adopted a lot of. I mean, even everything
we're exporting our definition onto it of what teaching looks like and should look like.
Yeah. And but he even compares even the way that Jesus taught was much more of this Hebrew methodology, which was conversational. Yeah. I mean, outside of like the Sermon on the Mount, there are few examples, and I'm speaking off the top of my head here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like almost all the examples from teaching, he's in a crowd where it's back and forth. People ask, like, there's so many times where people interject with a question. Well, what about this? What about this? You know, even the way that he teaches is story-driven parables that are confusing the crap out of most of the people that are listening and they're leaning in, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like even the way that Jesus taught was conversational. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this guy on the stage that has all the answers, but we tend to think that. We see the word teach or Jesus was teaching or taught this, and we have a perception in our brain as churched Americans of he's probably on a stage. I mean, he's outside, but almost all the times. But you know what I mean? Like we have that idea that he has all the answers.
That's how it is in school.
Yeah.
You're taught that from so young.
Yeah.
Like this reality of just listen. Well, to be fair, not all teachers want you to just sit there and listen. I mean, they want you to act right, right? But at the same time, there is this other reality of like they want you to engage, but the engagement is brutal.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to get students. So like I will just let it be awkward with students, to be honest. I don't care.
Oh, absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
And I find that the ones who don't really want to do anything, you know, about at least right then and there in their life, like that don't want to do anything, won't come back. They'll just, it'll be awkward for them. It'll be too cringe for them. And they're just like, I don't know. I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of go, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That's good. And there will be other places, youth ministries and places that will engage you on that level. It's just not, we're not going to do that. And it's okay. And like, you know, I mean, what we do anyways in the first place is offer relationships. So
absolutely,
it'd be pretty hard for them to just come to some service where somebody's teaching.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't, we don't have much of that reality. So it's hard for them to avoid that.
I was like, it's like sixth grade or something. It was the first time I went to any youth ministry thing. And it was great. We went to like a lock-in at a Discovery Zone or so. If you guys know that place, like all the, you know, tubes and balls, and it was great for kids to play in, and it was awesome. It sounds horrible now as an adult thinking who was in charge
of
that.
Bump City, Emerald City, same place?
No, it was
the germs sound awful.
Yeah, in a pandemic world, it's like how do you do that? But as you know, time to just flirt with, you know, the girls all the whole time. That's really the reason why you go, right? But
sixth grade. Whoa,
this is before Corey peaked.
Aggressive.
By the way.
Yeah. It was middle school lock-in.
Are you sure?
Gosh. He says
some
mad laughs.
He set it up.
Hilarious. That's really funny.
So mad.
I had a really good point. What was I going to say?
Oh,
no. Something about a lock-in.
I remember even at that lock-in, and I brought a friend, and like we just knew at some point the youth pastor was going to gather everyone and talk to us for 10 minutes, and we had to stop playing, and we had to stop eating pizza or whatever it was, and it was just like you do the whole thing you can just to you wait through that. I'm not saying there's not really good fruit at some events like that and you have opportunities. I'm just saying, like, it's like, dude, when someone talks at you and you're not engaged, it takes 5 seconds to talk with any teacher out there to know that model doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. And there's actually a pretty big push from a lot of people in the education system to change even the way that we think about education, because that's not actually how you learn. You learn by doing. You learn by not just watching, but actually participating and coming alongside and doing different activities and using different parts of your brain and your body to learn stuff. And it's like everything we do in life that we learn really well, we learn not by sitting and listening, but by participating, by being, you know what I mean? So it's just, like, why have we gotten this place in church where the only way to grow spiritually is to sit in a chair or a pew and listen to someone who has all the information? It just, like, it's mind-boggling to me, the disconnect between how what actually happens in life to the way that we equate discipleship is getting a bunch of knowledge from someone who has a bunch of knowledge. It's just mind-blowing to me. What's going on?
Well,
taking crazy pills.
Let's talk about it from a micro-church point of view. And like the importance of, like, at some point it has to start with some level of teaching, though. You know what I mean? Like, when I look at my kids, like, I have to communicate at some point, this is a letter. This is a number.
Mm-hmm.
This is a color.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what number is this? Red.
Two.
Oh, you know that.
Sorry. Okay.
You know, you passed.
Like, if you if you were to
take that peeking. I peeked just now.
It's about now, like, the again, pulling the verses out and putting that balance in of going, like, at some point the teaching is important. And, like, I think so, I'm kind of prepping some stuff now for our little extended spiritual family of how do you spend an everyday, ordinary day with Jesus? Like, how do you do that? And if you have no concept of, these people do, I'm not saying they don't, but, like, if you don't have a concept of how to do that, you need someone to, like, explain, what do you mean by ordinary day with Jesus? Mm-hmm. Like, I need like a framework to put that in before I begin to fill that in. And so, like, I think I push back on the teaching so much because I lived in that world for so long, and it felt like if I teach at all, I'm betraying some purist sort of the deal.
Right.
And I've reached a point now where it's like, man, I do have a lot of years of experience and education and whatever. But even this morning, as I was prepping some things for one of our upcoming gatherings, I was like, okay, don't just teach.
Yeah.
Like, make it interactive, like you're saying. That's so. At first, I was like, I got 20 minutes, I think, that I could engage them. Mm-hmm. How much can I pack in? I was like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Back off.
There's a difference between teaching and preaching. And I think we equate the two. That's why early on I said teach versus training. Maybe that's not the right language. And I get why Damien uses that to
totally.
Be consistent with other things. But it's like we're trying to instruct and we're trying to help people learn and walk in. That's different than talking at. Like, and that's my point, is that there's a way of teaching that is different than standing up and just telling people information.
Right.
And that's, Corey, to one of the reasons why we brought McIlvain here. You know, like, I'd love to hear some of the ways you're doing that with students, even on this.
Is McIlvain going to be here?
some,
he's on his way.
Sometime soon he will be here. Even on the zero-hour trips, and, you know, unpack for us some of the ways that you're training students and the hope behind that. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and go back to, like, your whole sixth grade experience. I think everything ties back to that. Inevitably, your sixth grade experience.
Like my life, too, ties back to this.
It is one of the defining points of history.
Oh, man.
breathe.
Okay, coming back. Bring them back. The reality, like, that I've, you know, started to just see with students is that whole, like, they hate the whole teaching at, you know, it's like mm-hmm. talk to, talk with, and it's just so easy to see with students.
Yeah.
Like, maybe easier than adults. I think maybe by the time you become a quote unquote adult, you just kind of accept that as what it is within the church context.
Yeah.
But kids, they don't, it's pretty evident when they're just like, they're not paying attention at all. They're right. Like, you can see that they're counting the time
you
until you're
this.
Done talking.
Yeah. Like, I can fake it when I'm sitting at church with looking at the scores on my phone. And I can hide the phone, but
at
they don't
church.
Do that well.
Kids, they're just
at church.
No interest. You know, and the age group makes it even more glaringly bad. You know, yeah. The middle school years, like, oh boy. You're like, if you do that, good luck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always just kind of been in that within student ministry. So for me, that's always been a reality. How do I get them to engage in conversation at any capacity? But even more so, how do I get them to engage the information first? Mm-hmm. And like on the trips, that was really key for me to think through, because what I don't want to do is, because even trying to engage a kid is still hard. You know, like, even if you're the greatest at getting them to talk and converse with you, it's still difficult. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that has to be done. There isn't, like, that simple concept of a give-and-take conversation with kids. You know, like, even yesterday, I had two students that I saw or that I was meeting within a discipleship format in our, like, triad time, and then two of our other students from a different part of the city were at the same coffee shop. It's I'm meeting with the two boys and there's two girls, and I'm trying to introduce the two. And I'm like, Bell, Emerson, meet Gavin and Matthew. And the boys just go, hey. And they go back to playing pool. It's just like, that was the extent of it. But that's how conversations go when you're a high school kid.
Right.
And it's so I'm just trying to set it up. It's like, it's hard. So I think first and foremost, like there has to be that interest level for them. And so on the trips, at least, we try to set it up. We did set it up, and we will continue to set it up with a format that is, you're engaging with God first. Yeah. You're engaging with this material. I don't want to put material, I don't want to teach you and then hope that you engage. Mm-hmm. I want you to engage this first and allow God to speak to you through that.
Dude.
And if you don't, if you're not into that, you're really not going to enjoy the trip.
Yeah.
Like, you really won't. And I tell them that on the front end. So it's not a shock or a surprise.
Right.
We try to build that format in as we're going.
Right.
Because if I don't do that, then the conversation just feels so brutal. I mean, as a teacher, you try to do the same thing. You say, go read this book, come back, and then we'll discuss it in class. Mm. Well, how many of those kids read the book?
Right.
Like, I'm going to guess, I know, like Storm tells me, I mean, it's like, it's less than like 20% of the kids read the actual book.
Oh, I don't know if I ever had ever done the pre-work before the conversation in school.
What?
Ever.
So I'm like the only, I am the 20%
yeah,
in this room.
I don't even know if that's an accurate number. I just threw that out there, but it's bad.
That's probably
it's
being
bad.
Generous.
I think in here I would be 33.3 though, right? Is that how math works?
I don't understand.
Not true. I would.
Okay.
Yeah, well, not then. I would now. But
anyway,
the reality.
I still wouldn't. So,
sixth grade, though, you would not.
But isn't that why Jesus like does what he does? Because essentially, he has high school students.
Yep.
I mean, they're more mature than our teenagers, right? Like, I mean, Peter's probably 17-ish and married already. But like, at a level, he's like, yeah, you're still teenagers, and the frontal cortexes or whatever is still forming, you know,
exactly.
And it's like, hey, see that guy scattering seed over there? The kingdom of God is like that guy.
The things you teach are,
see that cardinal right outside the window? God cares about that cardinal, so he cares about you.
Yeah.
It's like, let me just use what I got. What do I got?
Yeah. That's so good. Yeah.
So I think on the trips, that's at least the way that we've set it up. And I mean, we gave them 2 hours every morning on the trip to like engage like in kind of a meditative practice that we set them up on, and then to engage the material that we were going to basically discuss the rest of the entire day.
Yeah.
You know, for a full day, we're going to discuss this whole thing.
Yeah.
And they were, I mean, the students were just crushing that. They were eating that up. And I thought, I was blown away by that. That was the most amount of time I think I'd ever given a student in that kind of a capacity to look at something along those lines. And they were loving it. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is...
Let me throw one more thing in there too, in light of students. And I would say this probably about humanity in general, but my youth pastor would always say, whatever, if you'll...
I just dropped my coffee.
That's really choking on a peanut.
I'm sorry.
If you'll raise the bar, they'll raise to it.
Yeah. At least the right ones will.
Yeah.
And not that there are wrong ones. I'm just saying the reality is the ones
early
that are hungry will raise
to
that bar.
But what it does, I think, is it raises another bar for those that are like watching that.
Yes, agreed.
And I would say what you did on that trip, at least my experience watching it, was like you raised the bar and they were like, oh, you trust me to go do this.
Totally.
And you believe in me to engage this, access this, talk about it. Okay, I don't have a lot of people in my life probably doing that.
No.
And, I'm going to, you know, and I would say the same is true for, like, what we do in our own disciple making, in our micro churches, is like, all right, that's why we're trying to push Discovery Bible Studies and this kind of way of discovering Jesus together. It's like, you've never led one of these? Why don't you do it next week? It's like, whoa.
Are you sure? You want me?
Yeah, totally. Right. Because you're facilitating a conversation. We're going to discuss it together. Yeah. And it's like, to go back to the question of what has kept us in this place for so long, when you said part of the responsibility is on like the ordinary people, the other part of the responsibility is on those that have said, yeah, I don't trust you guys with this knowledge
Absolutely.
And information.
Absolutely.
It needs to be disseminated through me because it's safer this way. And it's like, man, we got to like remember, there's no Holy Spirit Jr.
Mm-hmm.
The power of God that raised Christ from the dead is living within all of us. It was like, man, I just trust you with it. Like, let's go. You know, I think that belief in each other and in those that we're discipling will change that conversation of like, you don't just need me teaching you or whatever.
Yeah.
Did I make the point?
I don't know if that makes complete sense. No, that makes complete sense. Because also, like, then when they're set up in that reality, like, they've engaged on their level, yeah. on their terms. Like, they recognized that, like, they can engage with this on their own. That then the conversation, when we do equip, is a lot better conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I can actually talk to them on a level that they're like, yeah, I actually did read this. Because especially on the trip, it's like, I basically sent them out in the woods for 2 hours. They could go wherever they wanted on the campground. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah,
I mean, you might doodle for 2 hours, but dang, you know. The reality is that they have to have that time. Then when the engagement and the equipping happens, it's just so much better. It is a conversation.
Yeah. I think of it as you're building a skeleton to actually put some meat on, you know, and like if we just start throwing a bunch of meat out there and just it doesn't stick, it doesn't make sense. And you have some kind of framework, then, you know, and that framework is often built in a discovery type of format. So I think of teaching in lots of different environments that we've taught over the years, still using a discovery-based model, even at some point. If you break them off into groups, read this passage together for the next 5 minutes, what stands out to you? Something that allows like participation, you're thinking through it. And then on the back end, here's some things that I would want to point out to you. And you get, like, even in the way that we traditionally teach, to sprinkle in a little bit more of a self-discovery or a group discovery is actually really effective. Done that in a bunch of different environments. The missionary pathway is actually predicated. So we talk about missionary pathway a lot as our primary training methodology, this 7-week really practice-based training that we do to see everyday disciples making disciples who see microchurches emerge. And it's all predicated on people like investing, like doing a little bit of the work, spending time in scripture beforehand, reading this short chapter, watching a short video.
Yeah.
So by the time that we gather, it's not an information dump. Like we'll gather on Zoom or gather in person and you're like, okay, what did God show you this week and what are you going to do about it? That is such a, if people actually do the work, and you'll see the missionary pathway groups, the ones that are hungry will. Like that's the reality. The ones that don't, it's okay. Maybe it's not the time. I stole that phrase from you years ago because you guys were doing similar things when you first started the Blessed Learning Community, and we were doing similar things that are like the huddle now, where it's just like, yeah, do stuff beforehand, immerse yourself in it. By the time you get together, you're not. It's not just information.
Yeah, the language I used, because I don't know who came up with reverse classroom experience. I like that phrase.
Yeah,
I said like, on all of our platforms, we're offering content first, so that's content dissemination. When we're together, it should be about content assimilation.
Yeah.
Like, this is the place where Absolutely. You're going to take the things that you have accessed. So if you don't access it while the rest of us are assimilating, you're trying to build the framework in your head,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially what I think is happening oftentimes in predominant models is, like, when we gather— You're disseminating content, so people are trying to build the framework in their head about how they could integrate that into their worldview, and that's hard to do in real time.
Yeah,
you need time to process, but Absolutely. Then all the data shows, like, within 20 minutes, you've forgotten 90%. So what happened to that framework that you just tried to start building, you know?
Right.
So I think that's, like, the heart of what we're saying is, like, oftentimes it sounds harsh or like it has an edge from us on, like, downplay teaching. We know people have gifts.
Yeah.
And we love that. I think we've done some teaching in little ways, even in this podcast, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
Here's 5 minutes on this. Here's 3 minutes on this, you know. And so, which is why we're saying, like, let's pull out the verses. Let's drop the VS and go, like, what's the balance of this within the network that we're building, within the disciple making that we're doing, within the micro churches that emerge?
Yeah. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, teachers. All of us do different things, but our primary thing that we do is to equip the body to do the work. You know, so in the end, where teaching has its role, it will always have its role. It's incredibly important, but it's not the thing. And we have just elevated it to be the thing. And we're just such Westerners, and we're such post-enlightenment Westerners that we just can't help ourselves. No matter how much we talk about this, we're still going to be driven that way. Knowledge is always going to be important. it's just not going to be the thing that's as important, more important than anything else. And that's how we usually approach it.
That's good.
Man, I'm excited to have Corey McIlvain on in the future to talk about this.
Still on my way.
I hope he makes it. Yeah.
All right, McIlvain, thanks, dude, for coming on.
Absolutely.
Boom, 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 boom.
Thanks for listening to the Underground Podcast. We hope that it's either been an encouragement to you or that it's created a curiosity about what it means to live into a missionary mindset with an aim to make disciples and see the church emerge. If you're a missionary or a microchurch in Kansas City and you're looking for coaching or just belonging within a network, we'd love to connect with you so we can learn about what you are doing and how you are joining Jesus for gospel saturation in this city. If you're outside the Kansas City area and have questions about what it would mean to catalyze a disciple-making movement that leads to the emergence of microchurches in every network within your city, we'd love to connect with you as well and offer whatever resources might be helpful to you. You can find out more at kcunderground.com. Grace and peace, friends.